Tomorrow at 6 a.m. starts officially
trout season.
Fishing season, trout season, all right? So if anyone's interested in getting out and doing some fishing for trout, especially some of those that I work with on the fly fishing, let me know.
Okay. So, Fisher people, see you.
Come see me today.
All right.
We'll schedule some stuff.
In most public high schools, there's a couple of teachers. Standout teachers, you know the kind. They might stay late just talking with a student. They notice the kid falling asleep in the back of the class and do more than tell them to snap out of it. But how many public high school teachers take their students fishing?
Like, we have no classes, we don't do testing, don't give grades. It's advisory based. 12 or 14 kids stay together for 4 years with the same advisor. It's internship based. 2 days a week, they're out of here with a mentor in the world doing work that's rooted in real applications and real consequences.
That's Charlie Plant. He's a principal at the Met School in Providence, Rhode Island, a school where student-teacher fishing trips and morning Tai Chi classes are not uncommon. The Met is a public charter school, started in 1996 by the Big Picture Company, a nonprofit education reform group. At a time when most reformers are calling for more standardization, more testing, and a stricter national curriculum to solve the problems facing America's public schools, the Metropolitan Regional Career and Technical Center, the Met School, is taking a giant leap in the other direction. With the help of parents, advisors, and mentors, the 200-odd students at each Met campus design their own education from a blend of internships, known as LTIs, and long-term projects. Instead of tests, each student must present his or her work at an exhibition before a committee of faculty, fellow students, and their families at the conclusion of each quarter. This unusual approach to education has raised some eyebrows. Visitors to the Met are sometimes skeptical when they see students wandering the halls, listening to music, or napping. But Met advisors say education is about more than just seat time. And so far, the Met strategy seems to be working. All 47 students in the first graduating class were accepted to college and earned a total of $400,000 in scholarship funds. Now the two Providence campuses have five times as many applicants as spaces, and the Gates Foundation has contributed $3.5 million to build 12 new schools nationwide based on the Met model. We spent several weeks at the two Met campuses, talking to students, advisors, administrators, and family members about their experiences there and about what it's like to be part of this experiment in education. Now we bring you their stories. From BSR 88.1 FM, it's Inside Out. Tonight, old school, new school, life at the Met. Education straight up with a twist.
What makes this exhibition different from other exhibitions is that the big step at the Met is going from 10th grade to 11th grade, which is junior institute to senior institute. The student, in this case Connor, is going to prove that he's ready to take his learning to the next level, that he's able to work independently and do all the things that are necessary to complete life at the Met.
Charlie was kind of iffy about me, you know, not knowing whether I would fit in or do the program or not.
Connor is a sophomore in his first year at the Met. Charlie Adler is his advisor.
My LTI is at the TF Green Airport with airport operations. So what we came up with the project is I have bunches of small little assignments. Calculate all the inspections, like tally all the inspections and dispersals of the wildlife, because they go around and inspect for wildlife. And I had to calculate them all, and then I took all the reported strikes of birds hitting airplanes and the non-reported strikes, which is like, there was like a dead bird, but nobody reported the bird getting hit by the airplane. So those are those. And then I did it, and I did percentages of it. I did ratios of the takes to inspections and stuff like that. And then I did it all by hand at first, and then I put it all into the Excel.
So which learning goals were covered by all of these?
All of them.
Okay, and now be specific.
All right, I'll go into each one.
Yeah.
Empirical reasoning. I used a lot of research. Because I looked into the advisory circulars, and I suppose I used logic. Well, I'll just skip that one because I don't want to try to figure out what I used it in. Everybody was pressuring me to make a timeline, so I made a timeline, and now I'm behind on the timeline. What I have so far is...
I went to a traditional middle school. You know, I did fine, you know, like I was like a B average student, but I really, really did not have any interest in school. Like, I would try to fake that I was sick all the time. I would go there and, like, rather, you know, hang around with my friends. You know, I just wasn't interested at all in what I was learning. I didn't feel like it really pertained to my real life. They advertised the Met, and they were like, you know, it's a school in Providence. If you want to go there, you can reach your dreams. And I was just, you know, like, this inner city girl, you know, I wanted to be a singer. And also I was like, word, you know, like, I can go to the school and I can become a singer. You know, this is the perfect opportunity for me. And going to the Met, I guess because I was so bored with regular school, like, I just fit in.
Let's think about what education would be if you didn't think about a school. You just thought about educating kids.
Dennis Litke, Met co-founder.
Schools are pretty bad, especially high schools. And who gets screwed but kids? And so this was a chance to offer kids a new way of learning. It's, I always talk about, we're really saving children. Kid had a special education plan, and everybody was being frustrated, and he was an amazing kid. And I came in and sat there, and they're worrying about this math and this reading, but the kid couldn't get school on time. So why are you worrying about these little stupid stuff, you know? So I remember the meeting. It was very cool. I said to the mom who worked in Boston, what time you go to work? And she says, 6 o'clock. So she was gone, and the kid would just sleep. And we try all kinds of things. We call him, wake him up. He'd say, okay, doc, thanks. And he'd hang up and go back to bed. So then we had a thing. We had the next step. We made him get out of bed. Okay, stand up. Move your feet now. Start moving. Now, you might think that's babying a kid too much, and he was a 16-year-old at that time. But for whatever happened, he wasn't going to be successful because he couldn't get by that particular place. So our job was to get him by. And so then I said, drop him in my house, 6 o'clock, and I run and do Tai Chi in the morning, so might as well. So he got into it. He started, and we'd run in the morning, have breakfast, walk to school. He'd meet at school at 7 o'clock, could read, do his stuff. And then he got into he ended up, this is the bad part, he ended up quitting his band because people started not coming on time. Whoa! I destroyed them! I was out with some kids and I realized there are no kids outside. And we're trying to make school real, but what we do is we have a fake little place and we bring real stuff inside when the world's all out there not being used. And so I said, God, this makes sense, man. Let's get kids out of the building into real places so they can work on real computer problems. They can work with dying patients. They can work on creating things that are needed in the hospital. So it just seems silly to lock them up in school.
I work with Boris Bailey.
Dan, sophomore at the Met.
Who is a metal artist and specializes in making street sign stuff, chairs, bowls, mailboxes, that sort of thing. I think the thing that I like to do best here is probably the handwork, like hand sawing and filing. That's probably my favorite thing to do. But other than that, I like to work on the machines just because it's, you know, it's fun. They're big and loud. It's pretty fun.
These are drilling where the bowl can be hung.
What we do here is primarily make stuff right now that the bread and butter line is making furniture and wall art from recycled traffic signs. I like the traffic signs because, first of all, they're very graphically beautiful. Second of all, they're things that tell you what to do, and the thought of beating the hell out of them and cutting them up is kind of bad boy, kind of rebellious, and I like that part of it.
At the beginning of the year, I was kind of having trouble looking for an internship because I wanted to find something that had to do with art, but every place that I went to, no one would seem interested in having an intern or, you know, something like that. And I just saw them in the Yellow Pages and it just said metal artist. So I was like, oh, that sounds pretty cool, you know. I decided to give them a call and I came in for an interview and we just clicked right away.
Dan's going to be helping me this summer on a totem pole made of recycled handguns, which should be installed for the Convergence Festival by August 1st somehow. And that's going to be positioned across from the federal courthouse. The LTIs are really good because they're very practical for entering the world. Schools can only teach you so much usually, but this actually gives you a sense of how a business is run, you know, what kind of work needs to be done, and the fact that it's not all fun stuff, even in the art world. I wish I had something like that when I was going to high school. This guy, you know, it seemed like good karma and good synchronicity, and I've thoroughly enjoyed seeing the loop go around because I see myself in him, what, 25 years ago now, or whenever I was in his shoes.
Oh, actually, you know what? I got one here. I'm sorry.
You have to be willing to be focused and have an interest.
Flavia, Met Junior.
And be responsible and going twice a week to an internship, showing up, calling, making sure you're there. My LTI is at a modeling agency, it's called AKA Models, and my main focus is like I want to be a model, I want to do big time. When I'm at my internship, I love it, like I love my internship because it's something that I want to do, but then I look forward to coming here because this is where I like laugh most of the time, and you know I have people around me that know I like to laugh and do anything, you know, just to make me laugh. It's not like in my file.
The internship is a way to get out, to follow your passion in the real world, but it's not an end in itself. Like Flavia at the modeling agency, who's, I think is like a perfect example of something that could be utterly shallow. You go to a modeling agency and it's all about like show and, you know, what can you really learn there? And she's doing really interesting things there. Like she's doing their books. So she's learning how to do accounting. She's putting together a whole binder full of stuff to give to models who are beginning models. So she has to learn about the tax benefits or tax requirements of contract employees, whatever they are. Like, I don't even know what they are. And so if she were actually just learning the internship and she got a runway walk and a picture out of it, it'd be pretty weak. But she gets much deeper material from it.
My senior thesis project is I have to learn to design clothes and go have a fashion show and like recruit models or people that want to have exposure.
She was completely depressed at her last exhibition. And even talking about like, I don't know if I should be in school, blah, blah, blah. And then she got this modeling thing and she is so excited, and her last exhibition was great. It was phenomenal. And the difference is like that she hooked into something that was her interest, and she hooked in with a person who was caring and who was really good with her. And we see that happen again and again. Another part is the culture of the place, which takes things seriously. So when ninth graders go to 11th grader exhibitions and they see that people are caring and motivated about their work, it's contagious. You know, it's like the kind of like positive peer pressure that's really amazing.
I found it. I was like, oh, I forgot about that.
Physical fitness? No. Perseverance? I'm here today, aren't I? That's perseverance enough for me, right? I've gone through it. I haven't given up yet. I'm still motivated to do it. Self-awareness. Can you explain what self-awareness is, and I'll tell you if I have it or not.
Well, not right now.
All right. Well, I say I know myself and I am aware. So that's self-awareness, right?
Keep going. Okay.
Oh yeah, I'm aware that I slack off. I'm aware of my gaps in it. So those are learning goals. So I pretty much hit almost. I hit some of them. I hit at least 3 out of 5, so I had the majority.
You wouldn't recognize him if you met the Connor from a year ago. I mean, here's a kid who now is one of the most sensitive kids who's writing poetry and going after his passion and feeling good about life and struggling with things day in and day out, but knows that he has someone and a whole staff of people and other students. And to see this kid flourish, I mean, it is absolutely amazing. I mean, I almost cried at his first two exhibitions. His mother almost cried.
You know, it started off with the stuff that's, like, legal and nobody really cares whether you smoke it, until the more stuff like cocaine and stuff. When I was about 12 and I started doing freebase cocaine, and then I got into the crack, and I went escalated for about 3 years with the crack.
I did pot, ecstasy, cocaine, crack, heroin, and alcohol. And I wrote about them. I have a history of them. the effects of them, what they do to your body, how they get you high, and like I have a short reflection on all of them. And then in here I also have interviews with some of my my recovering drug addict friends, and some of them aren't recovering. My biggest gap is, once again, I made a timeline, which I knew I wasn't going to follow, but I made it to make people happy, and I'm way behind on that timeline.
What I'm struggling with, and we'll talk about it afterwards, and this is one of the hard things, but we have certain requirements, and you've done a lot of work, and again, we'll go over it at the very end, but just plant in your head, what do you do with someone who's been late 80% of the time? Missed 90% of the pick-me-ups.
What do you do with somebody who's struggled to stay in school, to break a pattern of the past, who has not been perfect because he's not quite perfect yet because he's learned the right road and has been late but's been pushing himself to the extreme limit, who cannot do any more than he's already doing? Do you fail him or do you pass him? I believe you fail him, because did I say fail?
I believe you pass him.
I'm sorry, I said fail because my mind is rolling. Because you pass him, because you're gonna fail him, and now if you fail him, he's gonna drop out of school because he just can't do anymore. Unfortunately, that should be the answer.
It's not an issue of passing and failing, but it's a matter of when you need to get here on time, you do. Okay, and I realize where you've come to get here. Okay, compared to last year. There's no doubt about it, and I hope you talk about that in your final reflection. But it's now that excuse is...
It's not an excuse.
I
hate the word excuse.
Okay, it's not an excuse, okay? But that justification for you continuing is self-defeating. You're sort of saying to yourself, I'm not quite at that level yet. And the fact is, I know you are.
Yeah, but
you are.
But I'm a drug addict. I always have to justify things.
Okay, you're not anymore. Okay?
I think being a student, you should feel empowered and understand you do have a place in this world, and you can contribute at an early age and not just when you're 20 or, older than that.
Danique, now a vice principal, was a med advisor for 4 years. Misty, a member of the first graduating class and one of his advisees, is now a freshman at Brown University.
I worked with four other people and we created an idea to start our own nonprofit organization. You know, we wanted young people to have a voice in what was going on. And the Met was really helpful in that, because I got to start that nonprofit as part of my learning plan. The name of the organization is Youth in Action. That was, my education that year.
I like it.
Just knowing that, I have all this power over my education. That's so cool. It's not forbidden to do what I'm interested in.
Domingo is a chef at Bella Vista. He mentors Eddie, a Met junior.
If I have an education, I have another opportunity to go on something else, I don't go to be in a restaurant business at all. Basically, one of the main reasons, you don't have a family day, you have a kids, you're never with them. All the time you have to be in the restaurant business or in the kitchen or on the front of the house. So you have to dedicate a lot of time to the restaurant business. So I don't recommend this kind of job to anybody. It's like you go to jail for life.
I learned that from him, and just how to cut meat and onions and what is it called?
Julienne of vegetables.
Yeah, everything, just
cheese,
a lot.
Make cheese.
Preparing for lunch, everything. I've been in culinary arts. I've been interested in it since I was like 8 years old. Like, I was always watching the Food Network and, Channel 73. It's always like something that I've been interested in. So my father's a butcher, so I know how to cut meat too. So that helps out. And just when I got into the Met, they told me I can get internships and what I want to do. And other high schools I was at, I couldn't even have a culinary class. They didn't let me take it. So I just left the high schools. I've been to 5 high schools already. Here's my 5th one. I created my own recipe, my risotto recipe, duck risotto. And now I'm doing the cookbook for him. And he says that it's hard work, but, you know, hard work is everything, you know. As long as you do what you love, then that's all you have to do, I guess.
But that's not algebra.
It is algebra.
No, it's not. Okay. No, it's okay. Explain how it is.
Right.
Break it down.
Let's say I buy something for $389 a pound, right?
Right.
And then whatever I get, you I should have basic operations.
Yeah, that's.
So I need algebra.
Yes, I mean if you want to put algebra in it, you can, but that's not it. Any suggestions?
No, we don't start off.
For math for him?
He needs to get algebra into this project. He was making a...
What is the project?
Wrap-up stuff that
he's writing up all of Domingo's recipes, computerizing his cookbook for the...
Well, you can figure how much he pays, like, for example, a piece of chicken. See how much he pays at, like, a net cost.
If you're a parent saying, oh, my kid's not learning math... My question is, then what can you do? You know, I had a middle-class family that kept complaining about some of that. And I said, well, what kind of role do you play? You know, then you need to sit with your kid for an hour. It's just not us. It's got to be everybody.
When people come to interview to come here, we tell the family, you know, you're not going to get textbooks. You're not going to get content. Are you okay with that? You know, you're cool. Like, we're very upfront about that.
We look at it as it's not only about knowledge, but about applying knowledge. I'm an extremist in this. I don't believe there's any one set body of knowledge that everyone has to know anymore in this country. I think it's impossible. Our country is moving to one set of knowledge being tested on one exam. You know, this week in Massachusetts, the sophomores are taking an exam. If they do not pass, they do not graduate. So I think that's stupid. It's the wrong way. We're the opposite of that. And we've pulled it off because colleges have accepted our kids and they're doing good. And so people go, we'll never knock out that whole big testing system right now. That will knock out itself in the next 5 years when they find, oh, they tested and tested, but kids ain't getting better. Or there's still the gap between black and white or rich and poor.
Can't lie, when I first came to Brown, I was really overwhelmed because I was like, wow, you know, these are really smart people. Like, I don't know the same kind of information that they know. And I was like, oh God, you know, maybe the Met really didn't prepare me. And I really, really did question that. Maybe it just didn't prepare me for college, you know. I don't know these certain things, so I can't really progress. I felt like that for a lot of the first semester. I don't feel intimidated anymore. Just because I may not necessarily know a lot of the basic things, doesn't mean, one, that I won't learn them later on, and doesn't mean that I need to know them.
Two Mondays ago, I was having a problem, and I was all set to go back out and get high. You know, I was all geared up, you know. I came to Providence, and I went, and I got a crack pipe, and then I said, you know, I need to be in school, so I went to school. And then I talked to Charlie and he took the pipe from me and got rid of it. Like, I can talk to him whenever I have a problem, and he can read me, you know, like whether he knows I'm having a hard time.
If you got kids for 48 minutes once a day, you'll just see here's a lazy kid who's sleeping in the back. And you don't realize that the kid was with the mother in the hospital all night. And it's a miracle that the kid came to school. Or that the kid has a chronic asthma problem and doesn't sleep at night. You get to the point where you can look at a kid and you look at their face, and even the type of anger they have, you can tell what type of anger it is. And you have the flexibility to take that kid aside and spend some time with them.
I cleaned up right after my 15th birthday. I cleaned up. So about last May 8th, last year, 2000. And I realized that I can have fun with other kids, and I realized what fun was and stuff, because it was a long time since I had fun. And a lot of, you know, things that still just amaze me is like, good job, Connor, and stuff, and like kids saying, you know, I really look up to you and I respect you. And it's just like, I've never had that, you know. It's always it's always something that I try not to look at, because I'm kind of afraid of it is doing good, because I'm so used to being a negative example. And to being a positive example, it's just like a huge jump, and it's happened in so short a time that it kind of scares me. It actually scares me a lot.
We had this kid who came to me. I was in Vietnam, not in the war, but a few years ago, traveling. And kid came to me, he knew I was in Vietnam. He was interested. He asked for a couple books. I gave him a couple books. I showed him my slides. Then he got more interested, so he took a course in Vietnam and at Province College, 11th grader, got himself a B+. Then we found a course during the summer at Brown that was training teachers, high school teachers, to teach Vietnam. Our 11th grader took it. So he was with all 25 social studies teachers, our kid. So I finally am trying to figure out, what's your passion here, man? Why? His dad was a Vietnam veteran, had never talked to the boy about it once, wouldn't talk to him about it. So, of course, the kid's passionate about it. The kid is a senior project, took his dad to Vietnam last May. The boy, Joe Jr., was 18. His father was 18 when he was in Vietnam. Did a website on it. They go around giving talks. His father kept a journal. His father opened his drawer of medals and all of a sudden opened up. Kid raised all the money himself. Now, I don't give a damn that the kid didn't know the War of 1812 or didn't know the Boer War. What the kid knew was he knew a war deeply. He interviewed all kinds of soldiers. He interviewed the Vietnamese. He got his father talking about it. So that's what I care about. And when the kid wants to learn about the Civil War, the kid knows how to study. And he's passionate about history, not because he got a little bit of this and a little bit of this, because he got something very intense.
Inside Out is a production of Brown Student Radio. This week's show is produced by Sam Tyreller Cooper, Molly Messick, Melissa Bruff, Robin Amer, Carolyn McCoy, Megan Hall, Rachel Terp, Marshall Clement, Alana Berkowitz, Anna Goldman, and Met student Carlos David, and was edited by Paul McCarthy, Molly Messick, Melissa Bruff, and Sam Tyreller Cooper. Narration was done by Molly Messick. The executive producer of Inside Out is Paul McCarthy. Thanks to all the Met students, advisors, parents, and administrators who helped make this show possible. Special thanks to Leo Charest and Beth Taylor. Funding for this program is made possible by a generous grant from the Casey Shearer Memorial Fund. You can listen to this week's show or any of our past shows on the internet at www.bsrlive.com. Email questions to insideout@brown.edu. This is the last edition for this season. Tune in to Brown Student Radio 88.1 FM this September for more stories of Rhode Island life on Inside Out.